I didn't have time to be emotional. I was trying to understand what was going on.
Yes.
And I couldn't understand anything because of all the noise.
Hey there, friend. This is Stephanie Crevins, and you're listening to the Hot Mess Hotline. You are totally in the right place if you are an ambitious leader who wants to pull off a big, large, stupendous transformational project. We teach you how to lead with strategy, innovation, flexibility, and focus for new business results, digital transformation, tough decisions, and so much more. Whatever you're working on, we've got hard-earned lessons from executives to make you more adaptable and put into practice as soon as this episode is over. My friend, I want you to hear this conversation between me and my new friend, Ben Pilati. He's the CEO of Mad Software. He brings 24 years of technical experience across multiple industries, such as healthcare, energy services, retail, plus deep expertise in information security, supply chain, and workforce management. All right, let's dig into this conversation with Ben. And if you gasped as much as I did when I first heard this story, I will not be surprised. Let's go.
All right, Ben, tell us about your hot mess, sir.
Sure. Well, I worked for one of the largest supply chain software companies. And I was put on a project. And I ended up being on that project for roughly about 8 years.
Okay.
And my role in the project, I was kind of the lead technical architect. And it was to implement a workforce management scheduling system to the largest retailer. And
the largest retailer in the world, right?
That's
like,
correct.
We're talking like this big scope, big scope. Yes.
Very big scope. And by the time that I had left the project, we had implemented in 12 countries. Okay. And, you know, after years of being on the project, there were obviously many issues and rollouts and go lives, but nothing like when I had left the project. So after 8 years of being on the project, they had started rolling out to the largest market, which was the US market. I think I was about 5 months or so off the project where I got a phone call. And it's the kind of phone call that you don't really want to get. So when I got the call, their system, their production system, scheduling system, had been down for about 72 hours. And it was just chaos. I mean, because they developed their processes and their systems around this system. And so it's just kind of a domino effect. You know, one thing goes down, other things go down, and it just kind of rolls downhill quickly from there. So without a lot of detail, I really didn't know what was going on. You know, I'd get, you know, pulled into a call, and there were literally 30 to 40 people on the call, and it was incoherent. Could not, you know, I would try to ask a question, and then, you know, six people would interject, and it was just, there was no way to ascertain like what was going on. And you had people from other countries, and it was just like, it was just, you know, if it would have been recorded, it probably would have sounded like just, you know.
Yeah, no. Like that, like chaos and nonsense.
Exactly. Yeah. So basically, after trying to have a couple of conference calls to understand what was happening, it just wasn't working out. So I ended up getting on the next flight to Bentonville, Arkansas.
Okay.
And all throughout getting there, I was in the same conference call. And it was quite interesting. I'd never been through something like that where I had to go on site, but at the same time of trying to get on site, you know, I had to stay on the conference call. The first time that I dialed in into getting on site to location, I was continuously on the call with exception of going through security and boarding the plane.
Yes.
And the whole time, I mean, we're talking hours, and this call, it was laughable. It was just incoherent. It was just, everybody was just wasting time at that point.
Mm.
So, but you know, it was a serious thing. It was very, very serious. So
yes.
I get there on site, and the leadership team of the company that I worked for was there. Leadership of our customer was there. And I'm just, you know, I walk into the back and I just sit down quietly, and you know, everybody's talking, and you know, it's just, you know, I'm not going to start talking or interject. So I'm just sitting there. And, you know, I let, you know, somebody know that I'm just there, and I just sit down. And remember, I was there for about an hour in what they call at the time with the war room.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, I mean, it was basically just like on the conference call, you know, just, I think the emotions were so high on both sides and, yes. you know, without being able to figure out why it was down.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the kind of the frustrating part is, okay, you figure out why it's down, well, then you can work on a possible solution.
Yes.
But nobody could figure out why it was down. And so after about an hour, I'd heard enough. And I pulled out kind of the top executive of the company I was working for and told them, hey, we need to go outside. And I said, hey, this isn't working. I said, we need to have some structure. I said, you asked me to be here. There are some things that I need to be able to do and to control while trying to find out, you know, okay, what's going on. And so he said, what do you need? And I said, well, I said, first off, I said, I need complete control over product development, over cloud services, and over the support teams. And so he said, okay, he said, you've got it. I just know how it works, you know, in the corporate world, being in it for so long. And so just you got it doesn't mean anything. Okay. And I said, can you call the department heads and let them know? So, you know, I wasn't going to leave until like he actually did it on the spot.
Yes.
Because I'm not going to go from one chaotic mess to trying to run a team where it's another chaotic mess because nobody knows who's in charge of what's going on. By the time I got there, I was really tired of hearing chaos. You know?
Yes. Yeah. Let me ask you this, Ben, like, so in the room, you've got your clients, top executives, correct? Top IT leaders. You've got your company's top leaders. What was going through your mind when you said to your boss, like, I need complete control? Like, walk us through, I'm curious, like, what kind of confidence it takes to say, I need command of this situation in order to fix it?
I mean, I would say being with the firm at that point, roughly around 8 or 9 years, going into the company, I didn't know about, you know, when I first started the company, I didn't know really about the software that they had. I had to learn that. Mm-hmm. But also from the scale of customers. I never worked for a company that had the scale of customers that were Fortune 100, Fortune 500 customers. And it's very different from, you know, a small, medium business. And so, but when I started with the company, I made it a point to learn all the processes and procedures. I made it a part to learn even other areas and other departments that I didn't work in, to learn those as well. Mm. And so I was just like a sponge for knowledge when I started the job with them. And through that journey, you know, I became a subject matter expert. Mm-hmm. In various areas. And so I would get pulled into, you know, other issues, not nearly to the scale of this, but it's just, there is nothing that can replace experience. And it's kind of the catch 22 is, okay, well, how do you get the experience if you don't have the experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so just being,
you sign up for it is the answer. You sign up for it.
you sign up for it. Absolutely. But it's, you know, so many people, they just focus on what their role is.
Mm-hmm.
And really they just don't focus on, okay, what's interconnected with that. And I was a sponge for everything.
Yeah.
So being through large issues, customer issues, production down, you know, I had kind of developed my own area of, okay, how to problem solve, in my own way of problem solving.
Okay.
And, you know, when you're dealing with a system or various systems that are so large, where you have hundreds of people literally that are operating to maintain the system.
Mm-hmm.
It's you can't just go in saying, okay, I'm going to fix things. It doesn't work that way.
Okay.
And so when you have so many people involved and there's no organization, then really, I mean, how can you be effective in doing anything, you know, anything productive? you know, I knew the gravity of the situation. Obviously, I mean, I was one of the lead architects, so I had kind of an invested interest in getting this back up.
Yes.
Right. Even yes. if it was or wasn't my problem, still, you know, my name was stamped on that implementation. So to answer your question, when I came to him and I said, hey, I need X, Y, and Z, it was very methodical and very logical. I mean, the room was very emotional. And I mean, it completely affected their business. And you're talking about, at that point, about 2.3 million employees affected. It's one of those things where I just couldn't be emotional. I didn't have time to be emotional. I was trying mm-hmm. to understand what was going on.
Yes.
And I couldn't understand anything because of all the noise. So I knew, like the back of my hand, exactly which teams were involved in maintaining the system.
Yes, yes. Can I just say, I love what you just said, because I feel like this is something that applies in all areas of life. Is I couldn't understand what was going on because of all the noise. Like you obviously in that war room, there was a lot of physical noise, right? A lot of talking, a lot of yelling, a lot of emotions, a lot of, I'm sure, hand gestures, all the things, right? Like people are upset and going, but
right.
when it comes to day-to-day work, I feel like the same is true. Like when we don't know what's going on, it's because there's a lot of noise. And sometimes that's metaphorical, right? Like someone's creating mm-hmm. noise as a way to stall out a project or make something seem important that's not. I mean, that right there is a bumper sticker, sir. Like, I love that.
No, definitely, definitely. And at that point, I was detached from the project. You know, I had left the project and went on to other things at sure. that point, you know, sure. within the company. And so it's also why, you know, you can make an analogy of, you know, getting a second opinion from somebody that isn't involved in the situation that, mm-hmm. that you're having a problem with, right? Somebody yep. completely doesn't have any bias, right? And so I came in that I was disconnected from the project. It's just like, you know, I had made it a point to be disconnected from the project once I had left the project. And, yes. and you know, I left the project with everything working. But, you know, so I just had to be very analytical and not, you know, I couldn't go into it with an emotion like, you know, oh, you know, this was my baby and somebody broke it. No, not at all. So, yeah, it was just sheer. Honestly, it was just kind of sheer logic at that point.
Yes.
It was just like, okay, the teams that are involved day to day to running the system, maintaining the system, I need to have range of that team, right? So that I can start the process of analyzing, okay, what has happened and, you know, what's happening.
That makes sense. All right. So you pull your boss aside. You say, I need complete control. He makes it happen. What are your next steps to bring some kind of resolution to the situation?
Well, the next step at that point is to find out what happened. And so this is another thing of like, you know, that, and I've given advice to people that have started to work at large companies. Because a lot of these companies, even though they have a different culture, there are things that they do that allow them to run very similar. For example, if you have a company that you have project managers, you know, basically you can't really be a project manager unless you have your PMI certification, your project mm-hmm. manager certification. And that's not just with the company I was with. That's with, you know, a lot of large companies, right? They have yep. some kind of checks and balances and standards across the board. So basically I connected with cloud services and connected with the operational team and with the support team mm-hmm. Because even though they're two different teams, they're still interconnected with the customer, right?
Okay.
And so basically to find out, okay, what happened, when it happened, and just to find out kind of, it's a process of elimination at that point.
Okay.
You know, what was changed? Could anybody identify a change in the system? You know, and so we had to go through kind of the process. And I took the team and I didn't jumble the teams up into one at that point, because one is that's one thing that they never do. So I didn't want to introduce another variable in the play.
Okay.
So for example, I would go through the operational team. Basically what I wanted to do was rule out the probability of human error. So if anybody is going to make a change to the system because of the checks and balances, it has to go through a request process, an approval process. And love that somebody makes a change bypassing all of that.
Yeah, it sounds like to me, I mean, you were very methodical about, like you said, the process of elimination, but going from team to team to team to diagnose what was happening in that moment for that team to rule out, you know, that team impacting something. And when were you able to get the system back up and running? Just curious. Since the moment you arrived, because I know you said it'd been down like 72-ish hours when you first arrived or when you found out about it. Okay.
It took, it did take about 24 hours. So, so basically the next day, it was literally a needle in a haystack.
Yeah.
And so I want to kind of go back real quick if I can.
Yeah.
To the importance of, like, I'd never worked for cloud services and I'd never worked for support in a company.
Okay.
But I knew what their roles were.
Yes.
And, you know, by, like I said earlier, kind of learning other things outside of what you're directly involved with.
Yes.
Because if I wouldn't have known what cloud services did and what, you know, I wouldn't have known, for example, to go back to them and say, okay, let's go through this through a procedural first and rule out the, you know, procedures were broken or not. And so it just kind of showed the importance, in my opinion, of, you know, okay, if you're just, if you have one role to do and that's all you do, but you don't actually learn anything else, then you're going to be very limited to what you'll be able to do in the future.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So just going back, you know, it did take about a day to actually figure out what the root cause was. And that was going through cloud services team, going through the support team, rolling out, you know, okay, rolling out all of the variables that we knew of. And then once all those were rolled out, then I had a challenging task because now, you know, we rolled out human error. We rolled out a change. We rolled out, you know, so many things at that point. And so with a system that big, it's just literally a needle in a haystack. And going through very technical things, going through all the gazillion different types of log files, going through all of the things that are kind of deep down into what makes the software run. And it ended up being a scalability issue, and which was frustrating at the time, because for years I told the company, hey, we need to performance test this application with actual numbers of what were we rolling out to. You know, have we ever performance test this application for 2.3 million people to use it? No. I said, okay, well then how can we tell the customer that this has been certified for that? And at the end of the day, it was just, I could never make it happen. And it's just, at the end of the day, unfortunately, it's just the bottom line. You know, to performance test something of that scale was very costly. But I did find that it was a scaling problem. When a certain amount of users would hit the system, that basically what would happen is information wouldn't be transferred over into another component into the system. That's a very simple way of stating it.
Sure.
But there was nothing from a surface level or even from a below surface level in the logs and informational files that would tell me that was happening.
Wow.
So it was one of those, you know, a burn the midnight oil. And I mean, I had literally like 300 servers to dig through. They got to a point where, okay, when I ruled out, you know, with the teams, at that point, I had to take it independent because I could work much faster going through things than trying to tell, you know, the team or members of the team things to look for. And, you know, the time was not on our side at that point.
Yeah.
There is a point, you know, where service level agreements were broken. Now you have to deal with penalties. You have to deal with loss of business.
Yep.
Right. And it gets a very, very slippery slope. And also showing confidence to the customer that, you know, that we know what the hell we're doing.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Yep. Oh my gosh. And I, as before we take a commercial break, I just want to wrap up and put a pin in something you said, because I think it's so important. You know, the investment wasn't there on the front end. So like proactive investment to invest in scalability of the system. And I would bet my life savings that that money was still spent times by 10 on the back end for scalability testing and fixing, right? Like those kinds of problems, they always come up. And it just depends on, as leaders, you know, for our folks listening in, do you want to spend that time and money on the front end in a proactive way? Or do you want to spend it on the back end when shit breaks? Because that's how it goes.
Exactly. And this is my advice to people that are in, let's just say middle and upper management, that are in a role that they don't know what their direct reports is what we called them in the company, but basically what their employees would actually do. And that's a big problem. It's okay, you know, we have a role we need to fill, you know, for a manager or for, you know, a VP, and you fill that role and you bring somebody in that role. I'm sure that person has wonderful capabilities, but it has to be a part of the culture of the company. And it also from an individual standpoint, obviously, you know, when you're in a VP role, you have a lot of things that you have to manage. You have a lot of things from different areas. But if you don't know what your team is doing and you don't take the advice of your team, then unfortunately, when it comes to something like this, right, where the company is losing money because they're going to have to pay penalties for the downtime, it's not your technical team that is going to be on the chopping block.
Right.
It's you.
Yes.
And so that was a big problem, was the disconnect from the management to the workers. And it wasn't just me that was, you know, advocating for performance testing. The product development group was as well. But we could never get the funding to do that. And they paid dearly for it.
Yeah. Oof. All right, let's take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, let's talk about more lessons learned that you've had from that situation. And you've made a career change since then, slight career change, company change, if you will, and how you brought that situation into your new place.
Okay.
All right, well, we take a quick break from this amazing conversation today. I want to share with you a new tool that I have for you. I think that there's a myth in our workplaces. Well, let me say this. I know there's a myth in our workplaces that meetings have to suck, and I don't believe that whatsoever. By all accounts, our time in meetings have doubled, if not more, since the start of the pandemic. And this time with your colleagues should not be a waste of time. It should be the most valuable. So if you're looking for more resources to lead meetings that are productive, powerful, impactful, and have everyone participating, get over to my website at stephaniekrevins.com/lead-kickass-meetings and get some new tools so that when you leave a meeting with your colleagues, you're not left going, what the actual F was that? You're going, yes, we're going to take on the world together. Let's get this done, because it was an unbelievably powerful meeting. Those tools are out there for you, my friends, and they're on my website today, stephaniekrevins.com/lead-kickass-meetings. Now, let's get back into that conversation. All right, Ben, so let's come back. I know that was several years ago, definitely pre-pandemic and years before that. What have you taken with you since that time?
Well, since I started with the company, I would say not first, but maybe halfway in to my tenure in the company, I always said that that would be the last company I ever worked for. And it was because, I mean, I've had a long history of being in consulting for companies, you know, in the technology space. And I just, you know, got to a point where I no longer wanted to kind of, you know, go up the corporate ladder. And, you know, from when I started the company to where when I left the company, I was in a position very enviable, extremely enviable, and I worked hard for it, but I didn't want to. I decided it was my last time of being an employee. And so when I left the company, it was to start my own business.
Okay. And so, I mean, I know you had many, many different experiences at a variety of levels at your old employer, and you came to start your business. What have you thought about differently as an entrepreneur that you think is unique because of what you have learned?
Well, I did make a, I would say, kind of a mental mistake, is that I thought that all the experience that I had acquired working for large companies, contracting for large companies, having large customers, I always thought that starting business would be difficult, but I never had the grasp of how truly hard it was. And I had thought that I would rely on my experience and my learnings, but hey, you know, maybe it wouldn't be quite so hard. And that was the furthest from the truth.
Yep.
I realized that there are so many factors and variables and things that you have to deal with when you start your own company, that when you're an employee for a company, no matter how high the role or how wide the role, it just could never prepare me for what I had to go through of starting my own company. And I feel that now, looking back, you know, it was kind of a naive thought. You know, I just and it was because I hadn't done this before. I hadn't started a company before. Mm-hmm. And I realized that an entrepreneur can truly only understand other entrepreneur. Mm. And if you're just an employee, and I'm not like downplaying being an employee at all. But an employee, I mean, I looked through all the connections I made and the friendships and all of that. And it's just like, when I was an employee and I'd have an issue, I could talk to a colleague, right? Mm-hmm. But I realized that as an entrepreneur, you can't do that.
Yep.
And so there were things that, looking back, I was like, well, that was, you know, really naive thinking. But what I will take is problem solving is something that's learned. It's not a gift.
Yes.
Now, maybe you have maybe somebody has a gift of being able to retain information or things like that. But problem solving is like a muscle. And if you don't use it, you kind of lose it in a sense. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the big things that I took away from being involved, you know, as an employee and being a contractor in the past and all of that, was mm-hmm. my ability to problem solve. And it was something that I improved on over and over and over again. So bringing that over to, okay, now I have a whole different set of problems, and being able to problem solve and using that, I think that has allowed me to, you know, facilitate, you know, being able to get certain things done, mm-hmm. which if I wouldn't have had that muscle, problem solving muscle built, it would have been a lot more difficult.
Yep.
I would say that's really the big thing. Now, there are other things like being able to draft contracts that I did in the past with the company. Mm-hmm. I got really good at drafting contracts. And so bringing that into my company. And there are things like that, you know, that, you know, there are some things that I was able to do, whereas if not, I would have had to maybe subcontract it out, hire something out. But it's in no shape or form does the experience of the past allow me to just, hey, I'm going to start a company and we're going to be profitable and, you know, grow it. No, it just doesn't work that way.
So. It does not work that way.
No.
And you're still in the tech consulting space through MAD. What have you taken in terms of client service into this company that you think is really important for folks to know?
Well, I mean, we are we're a software company, and so we have our own software, but we do a little bit of consulting, but I would say whether it's consulting or software, it has to be customer first. It has to be customer oriented. You know, it's as a customer, they don't want to dial into, you know, an automated, you know, messaging machine. If there's a problem, then they want to be able to talk to somebody, and they want that person to understand the problem, right? And so we try to be, and that's because that's how I grew up, and that's how I, you know, really did my roles, you know, in the past. It was working with customers and problem solving with customers.
Yes.
And so what we try to do with MAD Software is put the customer first, and, you know, financially that may not be the best way to go. But when it comes to relationships and retention, well, it's 100% the best way to go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll ask you one last question. I'll get you, let you go back to changing your part of the world there. When we think about ambitious leaders, you know, or maybe our CIOs of 150 person shops, and they're looking to get into the 500 person shop, you know, they want to do more and be bigger and better. And as a leader, that is, you know, and do more transformative projects. What's your advice to them if they're thinking about, you know, making any kind of career leap that's like getting into something bigger with more consequences?
You mean as far as growing their own career?
Yep.
I would say that, I mean, company culture and the products and services have a lot to do with that. For example, you know, if you're a VP or you're a CTO or you're a CIO and the direction of the company isn't in the place of your personal direction, you're probably not in the place where you should be. And that's the thing about, you know, this country is so many opportunities. And there's a lot of people I know that they dislike their job, but they continue to work in the job because of their own sense of security.
Mm-hmm.
And really in life, you're just not going to get ahead of anything if you don't take any risk. And so, you know, it's all about, you know, okay, what sacrifices are you willing to take? I mean,
oh, yes.
I took a great paying job, great benefits to an unknown, right? And that's not for everybody. There were many times where I was thinking, you know, idiot, what did you do? You know, just like, you know, seriously. But at the end of the day, it was the right decision. And so somebody that's been in a role or you know, if they've gotten to a VP level or a C-level position, then, you know, they've done things out of the ordinary would be my, you know, my thought. And growth never stops. It shouldn't
yes.
stop.
Yes.
It shouldn't. So if you want more, but you don't have the support, it's not necessarily support of the company, but if the company is not going in the direction that you want to go, I think there should be consideration of a change, you know, find a place that's more suited to what your goals and ambitions are. And, yes. and that's the beauty of being able to work here in the U.S. And I've traveled many countries and being having the opportunity to make those kind of changes. You don't get that anyplace else.
Love it. Oh, could not agree more with everything you just said. Well, thank you so much, Ben, for this conversation. It's got me jazzed up. You know, this notion of like, if you want more, you're going to have to risk something. It's absolutely true in all parts of our life. So thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
All right. What did you think about that conversation with Ben? You know, I want to share with you some of my top takeaways and kind of summary of what I heard during this conversation. You know, something that's really important for ambitious leaders and frankly, leaders at any level is you have to assert yourself when there's a hot mess to fix. If no one is taking charge, I want you to be that person that takes charge. And you're listening to this podcast because I know you want to do something big and important. The way you solve hot messes is stepping in and saying, I'm going to take charge. I'm going to figure out what's going on here. I think that is one of the most important lessons you must learn from this conversation. And of course, that's not separate from being a great team player, from being a listener, from being empathetic, from being curious. But when everyone is talking over themselves and each other, someone has to step in and say, you know what? I'm going to figure out what's really going on here. I'm going to be neutral. I'm going to detach from my emotions. I'm going to use more logic because everyone else's emotions are way too high. You're going to be the person that solves that problem. Ben told us, you know, he has purposefully developed his problem solving skills and you can too. And that's because he took the time to know what other people did, to know his job forward and backwards, top to bottom, right? Nothing can replace being a learner who is a sponge, who is always willing to grow. Nothing. And knowing what other people's jobs are make you a better problem solver. The one quote that we talked about as it was happening, right? I can't understand what's happening because there's so much noise. There's a lot of noise that is created in our workplaces that stalls growth, progress, innovation. be willing to call it out and be willing to silence the noise that's not relevant, whatever that looks like in your situation. All right, my friend, those are my top takeaways. Now, if you have another pro troublemaker, change maker in your network that needs to hear this story too, would you please, please, please share it in whatever format you're listening in, video, audio, we've got it on all the players. And let's get back to changing our part of the world, and I'll see you next time, my friend.